not every year that a sitting prime minister attends the Boa Forum. So why have you chosen to attend it this year, incidentally, right after your Japan trip?
Sure. The timing wasn't pre-planned. As I mentioned just previously when I was in Japan, the Japan trip had been scheduled originally for last year, but due to scheduling difficulties, we had to postpone it. I offered some dates this year to the Japanese side. They had elections earlier in the year, and then we eventually settled on a March date for the Japan visit. Even before the Japan visit was announced, China had invited me to attend the Boa Forum. And as I said just now in Mandarin, this is the 25th anniversary of the Boa Forum, of which we are a founding member. And I also thought it would be useful for me to visit Hainan, given its development as a free trade port. So I decided to take up the invitation. And as it turns out, the dates were back-to-back. But the timing works out very well, because for Singapore, both China and Japan are important partners. It is so for Singapore, it is also true for ASEAN. And that's why it's important for us to engage both countries, to deepen our cooperation with them, and to engage them actively, not just bilaterally, but also in shaping regional affairs. That's our consistent message to both China and Japan. And we have had good visits to both countries, and we continue to welcome constructive engagement and further cooperation with both China and Japan.
PM, just before your Boa trip, we saw the news that Japan is set to downgrade ties to China. The rift is widening, and as you speak, and you attended Boa Forum, where Singapore prime ministers don't typically attend. That comes right after your Tokyo trip as well. So is Singapore doing anything different to balance relations with both trade partners, given the very strong reactions to the country's stance in November?
It's not as though Singapore prime ministers don't attend Boa Forum. It's not unusual for us to be here in Boa. We have done so from time to time. And as I said, this is a milestone anniversary for Boa, 25th anniversary. And it's also useful because this is the first year that Hainan has implemented its full independent customs operation and embarking on its free trade port. So it's another important partner for us to engage within China. But having said that, I recognize fully that China and Japan are going through a difficult phase in their relations. But from Singapore's point of view, we are friends with both China and Japan, and for that matter, with America and other major partners. China and America also has its own issues. But it should still, while these major powers may have difficulties in their relations, we want to be friends with all of them. China, Japan, America, and others. And it should be possible for us to do so. That is our approach. It has always been our approach consistently, and we will continue to find ways to engage all these major powers, deepen our cooperation further, and look for win-win outcomes.
PM, on that note of major powers, you said on multiple occasions that Singapore will not take sides in the ongoing US-China rivalry and that we will do what's in our best interest. As Singapore takes the chair of ASEAN next year, how will it convince or push other member states or regional partners even towards such a balanced approach?
Singapore's approach towards open and inclusive engagements with the major powers is not unique to Singapore. This is also ASEAN's position. No ASEAN country wants to choose sides. So ASEAN's position is to have omnidirectional active engagement with all the major powers and to build a region that's open and inclusive. And so when we have ASEAN summits, you will notice it's not just ASEAN member states meeting together, but we have ASEAN plus one summits with China, Japan, Korea, with our dialogue partners, Australia and New Zealand, and then with the plus three countries, China, Japan, Korea, we meet together. That is ASEAN's way. We want to engage all of the major powers, even if they have challenges amongst themselves. We engage them in positive, constructive dialogue, engagement, and we continue to find common ground for us to deepen our cooperation. So I don't think it will be difficult for us to convince ASEAN at all, because this is consensus amongst ASEAN countries that we do not want to choose sides, and we want to continue to keep our region open and inclusive.
PM, particularly for this trip in China, you have mentioned quite a few times about the healthy competition between Singapore and Hong Kong and how it's important for both cities to grow the pie together. Can you elaborate a little bit further in what ways are the two economies complementary to each other, and how does this Singapore and Hong Kong relations fit into the bigger picture of a Singapore and China bilateral relation?
I've talked about the healthy competition between Hong Kong and Singapore, but I've also said that the long-standing narrative about competition, rivalry, and zero-sum sort of loose-win competition between our two cities, I think is outdated and less relevant. The media tends to focus a lot on that kind of a rivalry. Hong Kong gains something, that means Singapore's loss. If Singapore gains ground, that is Hong Kong's loss. And very often it's within the financial sector. But I think over time, our two cities have developed in different directions, and we should focus more on collaboration and not so much on competition. The competition will continue, and I think it's healthy competition which should spur us to keep on doing better and to sharpen our respective value propositions. But both Hong Kong and Singapore, in a way, are gateways to different hinterlands. For Hong Kong, it's to the wider Chinese domestic market. For Singapore, it's to Southeast Asia. So we also have complementary roles. And if we combine our strengths together, I think we can both be complementary hubs for the entire region and add to the resilience and vibrancy of this entire region. So we had very good discussions yesterday with the chief executive on some potential areas for collaboration, including in areas like research and innovation, tourism, as well as civil service exchanges. And we look forward to doing more of this and also to explore how Singapore can participate in some of the new projects that Hong Kong is embarking on, like the Northern Metropolis. I would also say that all this is happening within the backdrop of excellent bilateral ties between China and Singapore. So that gives us many potential touch points within China itself, because we have Hong Kong, we have now the Hainan Free Trade Port, which is an interesting new opportunity. We have projects in so many different provinces of China, and all of these different projects allow us to engage China in multiple ways, to participate in China's development, and to contribute to China's success. So we will remain a long-term investor in China because we are confident about China's longer-term prospects. And within that backdrop, of course, we will look at different new opportunities, including, as I mentioned just now in Mandarin, exploring further collaboration in new areas like artificial intelligence, science and technology, and the green economy, to complement what China itself is doing in its new 15 five-year plans. Coming to China, Hainan or Hong Kong, and each time we visit China, we also see how fast things are developing here, how rapid the changes are. And I think it's also a good reminder for us in Singapore. We spoke about healthy competition just now, but the rapid developments in China, I think, also remind us that we cannot afford to stand still. We have to keep on upgrading our capabilities and think about how we add value to our partners and to the world. Unlike Hong Kong and Hainan, which have a big hinterland, which is the main Chinese domestic market, Singapore is only a city, country, city, and we only have ourselves. We don't have a larger hinterland behind us, but we do have ASEAN. So we should work harder to integrate the wider ASEAN market, which we are doing and we will continue to do, especially when we chair ASEAN next year. And within ASEAN itself, we can also move faster on sub-regional groupings like we have with Johor, the special economic zone, and we are looking at how we can bring the Riau Islands into this, going back to the earlier original idea of a growth triangle of Singapore, Johor, and the Riau Islands. We have connectivity arrangements with Vietnam. So these sub-regional arrangements allow us to move faster, even if the whole of ASEAN is not able to move at the same pace. And so we should continue to focus on these developments in order to provide us with that larger hinterland to operate from.
PM, my question is more on domestic. So you mentioned last week in Japan that households and businesses will feel the effect of this year's budget measures very soon. But within the week, we actually see prices going up in taxi, coffee shops. So it seems like businesses are actually shifting the increase in costs to consumers, and Singaporeans are feeling the pressure. So is the government planning to roll out any specific immediate measures to cushion impact? If not, when will be the right time?
We are monitoring the situation very closely, both the situation that's unfolding in the Middle East as well as the impact on the Singapore economy. For now, I think a lot of concerns are about the price impact, and I can fully understand the concerns. But we are also concerned about what might happen if the situation in the Middle East continues for a prolonged period of time, or even escalates, and the Strait of Hormuz continues to be blocked for a prolonged stretch, because then the impact of such a prolonged crisis is not just going to be about higher and elevated energy prices. We are talking about tremendous impact on supply chains, on energy markets, which will have huge impact for the global economy and on Singapore. So we are monitoring all this very closely, and meanwhile, our officials are also working very hard to prepare for all possible contingencies and to look at ways to strengthen our energy and supply chain resilience. So a lot of work has been happening, and we will have a chance to provide more updates in the upcoming session of Parliament in April very soon.
PM, if I may ask a follow-up question on that. You've had several conversations with leaders in Boa Forum, as well as with John Lee, and I think I recall during your trip to Hainan, you also took a call from Anwar. Were you discussing all these, and perhaps would you be able to share some kind of solutions that Asian leaders are perhaps thinking of in response to this crisis?
We've had a lot of discussions, whether with Malaysian Prime Minister Anwar, prior to that with Australia and New Zealand, and also with some of the leaders here in Boao, and then, of course, with Chief Executive Hong Kong. Everyone is concerned about what's going to happen in the Middle East. Everyone in Asia is very concerned because, as you all know, the Strait of Hormuz is a critical source from which oil and gas in Asia is consumed. So if the Straits of Hormuz continues to be blocked, as I said, the impact is not just going to be price. A long-term blockage of the strait will have impact on supplies. And we're talking downstream supplies in a whole range of different industries, not just in the oil markets, but diesel, which is used for many industries, and jet fuel, which is used for aviation. So we are talking about potentially severe knock-on impacts if there is a prolonged crisis in the Middle East, if there is escalation that impacts more energy infrastructure, or for that matter, if there is a prolonged blockage of the Strait of Hormuz. So these are all concerns that everyone shares. What can we do about this? For one, we hope that the current ongoing talks will lead to a de-escalation and a resolution of the crisis. But at the same time, we have to prepare for all eventualities. For Asian countries, many of whom are energy importers, we don't really have good solutions because we rely on energy, imported energy. But within Singapore itself, to the extent possible, we will look at how we might be able to diversify our supply sources and secure, as I mentioned just now, our energy supply chain resilience. Australia, for example, as I mentioned, is a very good example, because they are a reliable source of liquefied natural gas for Singapore. So there will be other partners that we are working on, and as I said just now, our officials have already been working hard to look at how we can strengthen our supply chain resilience across all of these areas. And we will be able to provide a further update very soon.
Thank you.